You're watching Agenda Awani. I am Ibrahim Sani. We now know that a few leaders might not even attend the ASEAN Summit, but for those who do attend, the ASEAN leaders are set to meet in person this weekend to address a bloody crisis that is playing out in Myanmar. Since the military instigated a coup in February, not many governments in ASEAN have recognized Myanmar's military junta as the legitimate body that is going to govern that nation. So this will be a meeting where they will try to decide the way forward collectively on behalf of ASEAN on how to deal with the Myanmar question. This will be their first face-to-face gathering since the COVID-19 pandemic, and of course, plenty of friends as well as new faces that will come to the table. How do we unpack all of this? Joining us is Thomas Daniel, the Fellow of Foreign Policy and Security Studies in ISIS Malaysia. Thomas, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. Let's do a quick recap into the situation of Myanmar as well as our relationship as ASEAN with it before we jump into Malaysia and our role within this context. Go ahead, Thomas.
Thank you, Ibrahim, for having me. I think when we speak about what's been happening in Myanmar as of late, since the coup on February 1st, things have certainly not gone according to anyone's plan, either the coup makers or those who suffered as a result of the coup. We see continued protests against the junta. We have seen junta responding in the only way they know how, which is a bloody crackdown. I think we have got at least about 730 deaths, 30 plus deaths officially that has been reported. Unofficially, these figures can be a bit higher. And despite the continued violence employed by the military, these protests continue, which indicate the significant opposition and distaste towards what the military has done in the aftermath of the November election. You are seeing this violence, you're seeing the scale of this violence in the heartland of the Irrawaddy Delta, but you're also seeing an escalation of violence in some of the border provinces, Shan in the Karen state, where you are seeing the ethnic armed organizations, the ethnic armed groups that many of whom have been running a long-standing, there are multiple groups running multiple insurgencies against the central government. There's been an uptake on violence there. I think several military bases have been overrun. The military has attempted to take them back, not all successfully. There's been a movement of troops to some of these border areas, and in spite of some of these areas being under a ceasefire agreement. So the situation does not look good. There is no sign of any kind of improvement anytime soon, and there is a lot of pressure on the military government in Myanmar. There's pressure on ASEAN, which I think we can get into later.
Yeah, so in fact, let's jump into it right now. So ASEAN is meeting for the first time face-to-face, and while they will argue plenty of things, not all of them will be there, because Nikkei Asia says that the Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, as well as the Thailand or Thai PM Prayut Chan-o-cha, has not registered to be signed up there, and they will skip this summit this Saturday. Is there an underlying tone that ASEAN is not all united when it comes to the Myanmar question?
Oh, absolutely. That is one of the fundamental challenges that ASEAN faced. There is no consensus. There is no unity on the aftermath of this coup, on how to deal with it, on what the national concerns are. There are very, different states have very different concerns and different ideas on how to proceed. Even states who share similar concerns on Myanmar and the potential ramifications of the coup and continued violence have different ideas and on how they choose to engage the Tatmadaw, whether they engage this recently formed National Unity Government by the other stakeholders who oppose the coup. It is a rather complex situation, and it's you see that reflected in the meeting in Jakarta itself. Very few countries push for it. Malaysia was one of them, Indonesia, Brunei, and you saw varying degrees of responses by other ASEAN member states. General Prayuth is not coming. Perhaps he sees some uncomfortable reflections of himself. President Duterte is not coming. Hardly surprising there. But make no mistake, I think the sort of signaling that's been sent really just reflects the lack of a cohesive viewpoint of ASEAN on this.
Thomas, let's approach this in a way where we can see some kind of outcome being reached. Do we really need everyone in ASEAN to be united in trying to understand and solve Myanmar collectively? Or do you feel that there would be enough in terms of some regional champions in the likes of President Jokowi of Indonesia or Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong and perhaps even Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin? Would two or three nations be enough in trying to address Myanmar collectively on behalf of ASEAN? Or it's an all or nothing approach? Which one do you think is a more likely outcome from this?
Look, I think the way ASEAN is set up, it is a consensus-based approach. You need all 10 members to agree on especially major decisions. Now, anything less than that is not going to be, quote-unquote, an ASEAN approach. And this is something that goes beyond Myanmar, but in particular, this is the challenge that we face now. You need all of ASEAN to agree. And you saw trouble of this even in the immediate aftermath of the coup, when Brunei was trying to get a consensus statement out. There were very different views on how strong that consensus statement should be and what the potential on what ASEAN would hope for as an organization. I think what you brought up of getting a few ASEAN member states to perhaps do something is an option, but that would again signal to ASEAN's external stakeholders and internal stakeholders the fact that this organization is just not united on this, and what kind of traction will it have? These countries moving without the ambit of ASEAN, that's another potential challenge. But it is an option that I think ASEAN member states, particularly those who are very concerned on Myanmar, should be willing to consider if we get to that stage.
Let's talk a little bit more about Malaysia and our role in this story. A few days ago, Malaysia's Foreign Minister, Datuk Seri Hishamuddin Tun Hussein, says that Malaysia will reiterate our stance to the effect that the violence in Myanmar must end. A few days ago, the Foreign Minister argues that there would be some demands, including, first, is that the violence of the country must cease immediately. Second, all political leaders in Myanmar must be released immediately. Third, Myanmar must agree to receive representatives from the ASEAN chair, which is currently Brunei, or from the ASEAN secretariat. As you can see, there's a whole long list of menus that Malaysia is asking of Myanmar. And of course, the clincher here is that the foreign minister says that our prime minister, Malaysia's prime minister, in his attendance to the Jakarta meeting or summit on April 24th, will not back down against all these kind of red line issues that has been shared by the foreign minister a few days ago. Now, are these very bombastic demands? Do you think that this is for sure? Or is there a genuine concern that Malaysia wants to seek an end into the situation that is fraught right now in Myanmar, as well as in ASEAN, if you think about it?
Look, I think what Foreign Minister Hisham mentioned there was what was commonly referred to as a return to normalcy. And those are the explicit, the three explicit conditions of what Malaysia believe is normalcy. I think those are rather reasonable demands from those of us who sit outside of Myanmar who are concerned about the coup. And this has been a consistent stand from the early days when Foreign Minister Hisham was one of the first to very publicly articulate to publicly put forward his and Malaysia's concern on what's going on in the coup. And I think subsequent statements by Prime Minister Muhyiddin and his push for the summit, after his meeting with Jokowi and then during the trip to Brunei, who holds the position of chair, it indicates that this is something that Malaysia is particularly strong and stringent about. And it's important for Malaysia to be seen to do this because we, over the last few years, we have taken a very public position on certain issues in Myanmar, including the sort of treatment and the crisis that led to the expulsion of the fleeing of the Rohingya, So these are, I think, very serious demands. I think these are reasonable demands, and we should be prepared that not all ASEAN members are going to see it this way. We should be prepared that the junta who is coming will try to push back and will try to use this meeting to seek some kind of concession on legitimacy, perhaps.
But we
still need to, you know, we still need to engage. We need to be very careful about how we engage, and we need to remember that this situation is extremely complex. It's going to unfold over a long time, and we need to be very careful what we commit to or not commit to, one way or the other.
There's also the question of legitimacy and moral policing that is involved, because there's some allegations by some quarters that there's a level of hypocrisy that is being leveled against some governments in ASEAN when it comes to the Myanmar question, especially the levels of hypocrisy that is being leveled against the Malaysian government. Some accusations include the issue of Malaysia deporting over 1,000 Myanmar nationals despite court order that took place in February this year. A lot of NGOs are also saying that the levels of conditions of living here in Malaysia when it comes to Myanmar nationals, both the legitimate workers as well as the Rohingya asylum seekers, are far below standards of human rights. So there's a lot of things that Malaysia as a country can be improved on when it comes to providing better care and relationship for Myanmar nationals in our borders. So when we talk about things like Myanmar as an issue, and then our government going to Jakarta talking about these items, at the same time, some of these conditions are currently happening at home. Where do we stand when it comes to the moral policing of this issue? Do you think that we have what it takes to ask more from others when we are seriously deficient in some areas ourselves?
Look, you know, ASEAN as an organization, when it comes to moral policing and when it comes to hypocrisy, you know, that's nothing new. This is part and part of the way ASEAN functions, despite being a quote an organization that aims to put people first. That's nothing new. And I agree with you. Malaysia has certainly come up short in many, many aspects in terms of how it handles refugees and asylum seekers in this country. I would also add that, you know, that this country appears to have a serious problem when it comes to xenophobic sentiments against migrants and refugees and asylum seekers. We have seen that very publicly since this pandemic has come. And on top of that, Malaysia has decided to adopt a very securitized approach when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers, and this is very, very problematic. I can understand some of the mindset behind that, but again, this has very real repercussions to people in this country and those who feel desperate enough that they want to come here. But in saying that, I think Malaysia has to engage in Myanmar for reasons of national interest. We have significant national interest in trying to you know, make sure the situation in Myanmar does not deteriorate. That the issue of refugees that you mentioned. So this country hosts large numbers of refugees from Myanmar, about 154,000 plus who hold UNHCR papers, but those who don't hold UNHCR papers, many, many more, and there is no known, there is no authoritative number on this. If the conditions in Myanmar continue, so with this coup in Myanmar, with the violence, it puts a stop to legal and voluntary efforts to repatriate some of these refugees who hold UNHCR papers back home. It puts pressure on, you know, and this violence will further, if it escalates, especially in the ethnic, in the areas controlled by ethnic armed groups, you're going to see an outflow of people. You already saw that earlier this month, when a couple of thousand people fled over the border to Thailand, only to be pushed back by the Thai military. So if this situation continues to deteriorate, and the indication is that it probably will, you know, you're going to see an outflow of people again, and Malaysia is going to have to deal with this outflow, like it or not. So how do we do it when we have a very securitized policy that essentially includes pushing boats back out to sea? This is going to be a significant problem for this country. Malaysia is also extremely concerned about the ongoing negotiations between the governments of Bangladesh and Myanmar on the repatriation of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya in camps across Cox's Bazar. So if the negotiations weren't going well anyway, and with the coup, You know, it doesn't look good. And now conditions in the camp have been deteriorating over the past 2 years. Even before that, pledges to aid have not been met. And when these conditions deteriorate, the indications are that these people are going to be in such a desperate position that they are going to try to strike it across the Andaman Sea. And Malaysia is a prime destination. In fact, we are in the period now where winds are relatively favorable and boats normally will be heading over. Another point I would make on Malaysia's interest in this is that we are very concerned on the geostrategic implications of what this coup entails for ASEAN as a regional organization. You know, there is a lot of major power competition to gain influence in Myanmar, and we need to monitor it carefully as it would have implications for this region as a whole.
What kind of implications are we talking about here?
I didn't hear you.
What kind of implications are we talking about here?
Well, look, Myanmar is at an extremely strategic position. It is extremely resource rich. It is situated between two major major powers that don't have a really good relationship, India and China. Both these countries have been vying for influence in Myanmar. And given the nature of ASEAN as a consensus-based organization, major powers can and have influenced ASEAN member states to impact sort of consensus-based decisions that have come out on ASEAN. So the ramifications will go far beyond what's just happening in Myanmar. And the other aspect on this is that, you know, ASEAN is going to be judged, like it or not, and ASEAN is really constricted on what it can do. But again, like it or not, ASEAN is going to be, ASEAN's reputation is really at stake here in public on how it manages this crisis and how, you know, how will our dialogue partners, whom we really, you know, the relationship is very important to ASEAN as an organization, how will our dialogue partners look and think about ASEAN or choose to engage ASEAN based on how we deal with the coup in Myanmar and the sort of potential outcomes? And how can, in turn, Myanmar, with whoever is in power there, influence how ASEAN chooses to engage with its dialogue partners? You know, this can and has happened, and these are ramifications. I guess, you know, on a smaller scale, we do have economic interest in Myanmar. It's not very substantial, it's not as substantial as it once was, but I think there's about a total of 8 billion ringgit in an investment there. And Malaysia will need to have good relations, you know, political, economic, social relations with Myanmar over the long term, regardless of who is in power there. That's just for us.
All right, we'll go for a short break before we continue our conversation with ISIS Malaysia. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Thomas Daniel, a fellow of Foreign Policy and Security Studies at ISIS Malaysia. Let's think about blue skies right now and what would be some of the weapons and strategies that you think is going to be deployed by ASEAN or by individual nations like Malaysia or perhaps even Indonesia and Singapore when it comes to the Myanmar crisis.
ASEAN is, again, as I mentioned, ASEAN is extremely constricted here in terms of what it can do. ASEAN can only step in, can only facilitate these processes, whether it's a humanitarian process to help deal with the humanitarian suffering that's happening in Myanmar, or whether it is a political process on the political fractures that are happening in Myanmar. ASEAN can only work to facilitate this if it is allowed to do so by whoever is in power, the multiple stakeholders in Myanmar, and by ASEAN members itself. So options are extremely limited. But what's important here is for ASEAN to remember that it needs to emerge from this with its reputation intact. I think in the short term, moving forward with what the UN Security Council has indicated, you know, the freeing of political prisoners, this humanitarian pause as a precursor to some kind of humanitarian assistance. I think these are the short-term goals that ASEAN needs to proceed with here.
Sorry, the way you speak, it's as if ASEAN has some sort of reputation to go about with. I'm not too sure if that reputation is there any longer. But notwithstanding that, do you feel that perhaps now is a good time for ASEAN to restore any semblance of positive, reputation it has left, or else risk of being completely washed away into the pages of history and becoming quite, a disheveled organization of regional proportions?
Yep, all fair points. I think, there is a lot of criticism on ASEAN for what people think it ought to do. And I think there are very real questions about what ASEAN can, what ASEAN is equipped to do. Now, this organization fundamentally, is built to be shackled to the will of the member states. ASEAN as an organization is extremely limited in its agency. It is the 10 member states who decide what and where and how moves forward. And this applies to Myanmar, it applies to questions of economics, it applies to South China Sea, a whole bunch of issues. So over the last, these last two decades at least, there's been a conflation of a lot of challenges that has been happening in ASEAN, including in Myanmar. This particular coup is new, but Myanmar has been a challenge for ASEAN for a few decades now. And with these particular challenges, the fundamental roots of ASEAN, its consensus building, its non-interference, these were put in place at a time where without these rules, ASEAN would not have been able to grow and to evolve into the organization that it is today. In saying that, the challenges have changed. And the question now is whether ASEAN can and should adapt to meet some of this. And I think what's going on in Myanmar will feed into this debate. I don't know how ASEAN is going to come out at the end of this. I think it is very easy to take the critical route to sort of take the critical route. I myself do this all the time, but there needs to be an appreciation of what ASEAN can realistically do and what it cannot do at this stage. If it's something that ASEAN can do, then it's a different story. Right now, there's a question of what ASEAN even can do.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the Prime Minister of Malaysia himself and away from ASEAN right now. This is perhaps his first test to try his chops at international affairs since taking over the office early last year. Do you feel that he might have something interesting in store for him to share with his colleagues at ASEAN, or perhaps there's some even unilateral decisions that he would like to take when it comes to solving the Myanmar question?
I don't know how much unilateral agency Malaysia has here. I don't know how much unilateral agency most ASEAN countries would have here. In my view, there are only two ASEAN countries which have any real sway with NAPIDOR. That's Thailand and Singapore. So in terms of unilateral moves, I don't see that happening. I think Malaysia and Prime Minister Muhyiddin will move in consultation with several of these states, Indonesia, Singapore, Brunei as chair, and we need to move in consultation with Thailand as well. In terms of this being here, and you're right, this is going to be his first foreign policy test. I think, whether Malaysia likes it or not, the impression of Malaysia out there in Southeast Asia is that we are a primary mover when it comes to Myanmar. There is an expectation on Malaysia to do something, but at the same time, we need to be extremely cautious about what we do, what we say in public, the kind of implications we give when it comes to whether we recognize one party or the other. These are really complicated minefields, and Malaysia needs to move very carefully. But at the same time, because of this public perception on us that we are movers in this, it's going to be very difficult for us to sort of not do anything as well. It's a challenge, but it's a challenge I think both the PM and the FM are very aware of, and I would look forward to see to actually looking at the readouts of what happens on Saturday.
Do you think that because of this inherent position that Malaysia has when it comes to being a first mover, or the inherent leadership when it comes to ASEAN versus Myanmar, do you feel that Tan Sri Muhyiddin might have to exercise the soft power that he has within him and perhaps within the government that he leads in order to make something practicable work out of this summit?
I think Prime Minister Muhyiddin, look, the Malaysia-Myanmar relationship is not really in good shape. You know, things sort of took a downturn from 2018 onwards when we very publicly came out to criticize Myanmar. And it was then Myanmar led by the NLD government, a democratically elected NLD government, on how they handled the Rohingya. So things sort of took a downturn from there. But even before that, our strong trade relationship was already on the decline because we were being eclipsed by leaps and bounds by Thailand and Singapore. So in terms of that sort of bilateral influence, you know, whether it's hard or economic or soft power, it's not that much. What Malaysia really can do is to really use its influence and its engagement with other members of ASEAN to sort of work and come up with common positions that are in line with ASEAN and national interests, but also, you know, very core fundamental international expectations on some very, very basic rights in Myanmar.
Thank you, Thomas. That was Thomas Daniel, the fellow at Foreign Policy at Security Studies at ISIS Malaysia. Perhaps you can get him on after this if something tangible comes out of the ASEAN summit, however impracticable that particular position may be. But until then, thanks very much for watching Agenda Awani. Continue to stay with us on Astro Awani.